Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. It's Dr. John, and we've got a great show lined up for everybody tonight. We've got our whole panel here. We've got two great guests, a couple of filmmakers from Raleigh, North Carolina, a place that I love a lot, NC State up there. Before we get going, just real quickly, got a few announcements coming up. First of all, next week we will be doing a broadcast from Raleigh, North Carolina, in honor of official Star Wars Day, May the 4th. So get prepared for that. It should be a lot of fun. I hope so. I hope the Force is with me every day. And then on the 11th, we've got another steampunk special to celebrate Steampunk Mid-Atlantic coming to the Ramada Inn on Blue Ridge Road in Raleigh, North Carolina. As far as events coming up, pardon?
May the Force give us steam for steampunk.
Yes, and that's exactly right, Papa Stro. Let the Force give us a bunch of steam. Well, I know there's a lot of hot air over here in Pauly's Island, but we won't talk about that, okay?
Just like Peter Gabriel said, give me steam.
That's exactly right. So May the 13th and 14th, we've got Tidewater Comic-Con in Virginia Beach, Virginia, at the Virginia Beach Civic Center. That's going to be great. I'll be there with Carolina Caricatures. Papa Stro is going to be there. Lots of our friends will be there, so it's going to be a blast. Also, Papa
Stro,
I'm going to
invite Dave Atwell to sail my sailboat there, too.
Oh, okay. That's cool. And Myrtle Beach Speedway, May the 27th, Friday. That'll be a blast. Yep. Myrtle Beach Speedway, Papa Stro and I will be there. Lots of cool activities, so be sure to join us for those. Tonight, we're going to go right into our guests. We have, of course, Will Williams. He's a filmmaker, and his most recent film is called No Child. It's a wonderful film. And then we have Rob Underhill, and a film of his that I especially like because I love conspiracy theories that aren't conspiracy theories that turn out to be very real. He produced and directed and edited The Carrington Effect. I'm sorry, The Carrington Event. I always say it wrong. The Carrington Event. And it's a great film, and we're going to talk to both these guys. First of all, Will, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. I really appreciate you guys having me on the show tonight.
Oh,
pleasure having you, Will.
Yeah, welcome aboard.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah. All right, so first of all, you got this great film out, and it's doing the film festival circuit, from what I understand, and it's called No Child. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the film? I believe you were behind the idea for the film, weren't you?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting story that ended up causing a very long-time friendship in the long run. What happened was I worked with Rob Underhill on one of his projects, but I had a minor role, and I had this idea for a film that I wanted to do, and I reached out to him and said, "Hey, Rob, you know, I don't know if you remember me. I did a small role in one of your films a while back, and I want to talk to you about an idea that I have." And basically what it was is I was originally trying to write a novel, but I got about 70 pages in, and I was seeing the whole thing as a film. So I said, you know what, this should be a film if this is the way I'm envisioning it. So I met with Rob and told him the idea that I had, and he really liked it. And the actual film is a lot different than the original idea, but I think it was definitely for the better. I owe all the credit to Rob because he took the idea and ran with it, and he wrote it, directed it, edited it. I mean, he was the real brains behind the operation. He helped me look better than I really am, in my opinion. As far as with the I played the lead character, and it's been traveling the circuit for a while, and it's done really well, won multiple awards, and we've been very excited about it.
That's awesome.
Well, that's great. Yeah, tell us a little bit. Yeah, tell us just a little bit about the main character that you play. I don't want to spoil it for everybody. But by the way, this afternoon when I called you, I said the first thing I said was, "What was it? Haven't you ever seen anybody get slapped before?" Going back to your part.
Yeah.
That was the greatest line. I mean, I haven't had a chance to use it, Dave Atwell. You can use that.
Let me get
out of hand. Yeah, Dave. Ever get out of hand?
That's a concept.
And your better half just lays to you, slaps you in front of a bunch of people. You can just look around and say, "Haven't you ever seen one get slapped before?" Just going back.
Yeah.
Hey, don't feel bad. Story of my life, man.
That was actually a very interesting scene, the whole slap scene, because we had to shoot that about 5 times, I think, maybe. And it was a real slap. So she was hitting me on the left side of my face, and I started feeling this little headache on my right temple, and I was like, "She might knock me out on the next one if we do this again." And I was, I was worried because I was like, if she knocks me out, all these people are going to see it that are in the room. And then I got to think about it. And I'm like, wait a second, this is on camera, so the whole world's going to see it if I get knocked out. But
I don't know the feeling, man.
Yeah,
what a feeling, brother. I feel it.
Will, you're talking to the world expert of getting hit in the head.
You're right. Father Straw, I'm going to have to get some advice from you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Baby doll damn near knocked me out one night with a slap. I slapped me so hard, I felt like a gun went off.
Yeah, don't mess with baby doll.
Yeah, but, John, back to your question on the character, it actually was the character was really inspired by a lot of events that I was going through. At one time in my life, the character is Will Windsor is his name. He's just out of college. He's looking for a corporate America job, thinks that's going to make him happy. And in the meantime, he tutors little kids, with literature and things like that. And he still lives the party lifestyle. He's still drinking heavily and going to all these parties, and what happens, I don't want to give too much away, but it basically what I envisioned for the story was that sometimes you don't always find the answers you're looking for from the teacher or the most experienced person. Sometimes you find it indirectly from, you're inspired by it. Somebody that has nothing to do with what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not always the person that's higher than you that gives you the wisdom. Sometimes it's somebody that, because I honestly feel that everybody you meet, you can learn something from them, no matter who they are. They can teach you something that you don't know, and they're more talented at something than you are. And it's just, that's how I feel.
Kind of like your whiskey remedy, right?
I agree.
Dave, for being sick?
Oh, absolutely.
that's
the cure-all for all anomalies, shark bites, stab wounds, colds, whiskey will fix it all.
Yeah, that's duct tape.
Thank you, Dr. Dave.
Yeah. Unless some Windex will fix anything, like the Greek weddings.
Right. Well, we got Dave, who's a nice author. He's done a lot of great work. And you told the world this is very early in the film, and I don't think this is going to give anything away, but you told that little kid about reading and how to really understand what you're reading. Do you mind going over that? And Dave, I want you to hear this, because I think it's for an author. I think it would be great if more people would teach folks how to read like this. Will, do you know the scene I'm talking about?
What was the last sentence? I'm sorry.
I said, do you know the scene I'm talking about where you're teaching the little kid how to read and how to understand what he's reading? I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, how it makes it, – because it's not about just it, – it's like when I was younger and I used to have to read out loud in class. I would never really, like, feel what I was reading. I would just read the words. But, you know, it's all about feeling what you're reading, what the writer's, you know, the feeling that the writer is putting into the words, not just the words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was one thing when he read a sentence and it talked about the character and what he had just been through. It was in one sentence, and then you pointed to the little kid and said, "Hey, this is what the guy's going through. Now you'll understand what he's doing in the book. Remember this." And I thought that was great. As long as I've been reading, I never really thought about that. Dave, that's what do you think about that? That's something as a writer, I bet you think about all the time, is how you can quickly describe your characters and give people insight into them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, you've got to. Character development to me is one of the biggest things when it comes down to brass tacks, and you know, not bashing fan fiction at all, but a lot of times with established characters, all you got to do is pretty much write the story and then fill in the blanks with names. But when you're actually starting from scratch and developing characters, and you know, a lot of folks tend to bypass the flaws in the characters. They go straight to the heroics of a character. And, you know, people are flawed, you know, and if you can show their weak side as well as you can show their heroic side, you know, you've hit on something. But no, I couldn't agree more. And it was very well said. There's nothing worse than reading a book or any type of work of fiction where you just buzz through it. You know what I mean? There's got to be something that kind of stops and makes you actually comprehend what you're reading. Oh yeah, no, excellent point.
Yeah, I thought that was a great part of the film early on, and we're not going to tell any more about it, but I can let everyone know we've got a link to the trailer that's on the front page of Comic-Con Stars. I hope everybody will enjoy that. It'll really tell you a lot about what's coming up in that film. So it's a wonderful film, and I'm glad you're having a lot of success as you're moving around the film circuit, the film festival circuit. Where are you headed next? Or do you have any more festivals online?
Well, we currently, there's one more festival that we know about. I think it's the Smoky Mountain Film Festival. But we do have some exciting news, wouldn't you say, Rob, that we can't quite share this second, but we will in the very near future we'll be able to share that.
Well, awesome. I guess you could say as much as it's going to be, you could probably tell them that there's going to be a national splash of some sort. You might as well tell them a little bit. We just can't be too specific, that's all. But it's got an outlet to reach the public, coming soon.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yes, so we will announce that as soon as we're able to, which is hopefully the sooner the better, obviously. But it should be in the next couple of weeks, I would think, that we can make it public.
Just let us know, and we'll get some information on Comic-Con Stars about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's wonderful.
I'll tell you,
well,
isn't that like the longest time? That's like work waiting on Santa Claus when you're a kid. When you're waiting for, I mean, it is the most agonizing time where every day you just kind of get up and you're going, okay, I know it's coming and I know everything's good, but okay, I hear you, it's going to be okay, but I can't say anything. That's why I don't know how these
guys
are walking
dead.
Said,
and I can't tell you now.
Yeah,
but I can tell you on the hotline. Just dial one for you.
They talk about these actors having to go in deep cover and that kind of stuff for some of these shows because you know they can't even run to the Scotchman for smokes because everybody's going, "Hey, dude, what happens? What happens?" That is the most agonizing time for anybody in the in the community. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Wow. And now somebody jumped in, and I want to get to him. Rob Underhill, you jumped in and told us a little bit about the upcoming good news, and that's great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, one reason that I wanted to have you on here is I really, really enjoyed the trailer for The Carrington Effect, and thank you for letting us have an opportunity to take a look at it. It's a wonderful film. I guess, why don't you tell us a little bit about why you wrote, why did you create that film? Because that's your brainchild, isn't it?
That's one of the big projects that we're still, we've written a whole series, and we're trying to get that in front of TV, in front of opportunities, everything from Sci-Fi Channel to HBO. We've got an amazing series written, so we're just trying to get in front of people right now. But it's one of the projects I'm really excited about. So the credit goes to my longtime friend Larry Gardner. Kept talking to me about the concept, like, you know what, Rob, the most amazingly underrated way the world's going to end is through a Carrington event-sized solar flare, because the power that released back in 1859, if that was a direct hit like it was then, today, we would have no electric grid for years, and people literally within a week will start going crazy and run out of food. So, because we're so driven by logistics and electricity that we have no way to communicate. But the interesting part about it is that for him, what that inspired me was, like, you know, it's one of these things, like a meteorite, you know what happened, right? if it's like a mega earthquake or like a whatever, you know that stuff. But for a nuclear explosion,
I buy T-Rex.
But this is like, this is just like, you know, 1 second the light's on, 1 second it's off. Like, oh, that's weird. And maybe that night there's an amazing, you know, Borealis thing going on in Northern Lights. And you're like, oh, wow, that's crazily cool. But it's going on a whimper, though. You have no idea what's about to happen, which is the end of the world. Mm. and you're just there kind of snoozing through it, waiting for something to, you know, someone to turn the lights back on. So that's what I found fascinating about it. And I, at the time, especially, I was amazed how few people knew about the event and how it could literally impact us today. So, and it still can. They still have not got the electric grid reinforced in a way that it could withstand something like this. They can't really bring it offline in the right way and that sort of thing. So it's still a problem waiting to happen, or I should say a struggle waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah. We take so much for granted. A lot of us do, and we're so dependent on the grid. Like, if the grid would go off, it's downright scary with the mentality what people might do to survive, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, you just look at and it happens all the time. We don't think about that, but every year there's a decent-sized one that nicks us, and you know, like, there'll be a couple cities without power because of a solar flare, not because of, like, some other malfunction, or, you know, you're stacking the radio waves. Sometimes that's from that. And there's one that happened when London went without power for, like, just a couple of days, and there was riots all over the city. Like, people went nuts, like, just from, having the power off for a day, let alone a week, right? So every city's going to be a little different how it reacts, but some will be up in flames within days. Other ones will be kind of wondering, what was that? And I'm waiting for someone to tell them what's happening. So it's a fascinating study in human nature and also preparedness and social structure. It's really an amazing study in all sorts of interesting things. Anarchy, of course.
Yeah. One thing I like, you got a character in there. It's a young girl. I guess she's about 20. And just the way she reacts when she can't get a cell phone signal, like, this is just ridiculous. Well, it's like, she doesn't know what ridiculous is going to be, does she, Rob?
No, that's just an open stage. It's like, oh, I can't use my cell phone. Oh, the TV's not working and the radio is not working. And they have to be a little more resourceful. They're kind of on this farm thing, and they've got, you know, so they're self-sufficient. But, you know, when you're right outside a city, that makes you a target. It doesn't make you safe or long-term sufficient, because you're just going to be the next place people go when they leave the city. So, but with her, it's funny. Like, she wants to take a shower, and the dad's like, hey, we don't got hot water for that. So, so she's complaining, all the kinds of things you expect from a teenage or a, you know, young adult type of situation. So, it's fun to exercise on people's behavior and how they would interact in just a, you know, what seems like a normal occurrence. You know, the power went out, so we'll grill on the grill and just kind of light some candles and wake up the next day and it'll be fine. That's the most people's concept of how to get through something.
I think I learned about this.
You know, the shame of it is, though, if you've ever been to the store and the little debit card readers have gone out and just watched the way people just absolutely vapor lock. And, you know, you've got three things to do. Pay cash, God forbid.
Mm-hmm.
Do without the item, God further forbid. Or three, the biggest devastating one, perhaps drive another quarter mile down the road and buy it somewhere else. I mean, how people will stomp their feet and tell the clerk who's making a robust $7.50 an hour, you know, well, what's your problem? I can't believe, you know, when are you going to have this fixed?
Yeah.
That poor guy behind the counter is just trying to get to 5 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
God forbid there be a real disaster, you know, because I've often said that if a tidal wave ever hit the East Coast, it would kill 1,000 people and then we'd kill everybody else ourselves.
Who needs walkers and zombies when you got actual people doing the damage for it?
Yeah, when you can do it yourself. Exactly. So, it's a shame when you really get to thinking about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the interesting things for me doing this project was we did a lot of research to make sure the science was accurate or very close to what the parameters would be in a real occurrence. And so I got to meet a lot of kind of prominent preppers. And, you know, the prominent ones aren't the ones that come out and see you on TV. They're the ones that, you know, actually don't want you to know where they live. And so they, I had an invitation to this one guy communicated with me. Like, hey, you know, I was happy to give you this advice and this insight. And if the SHTF, which of course means if something hits the fan, right? Get in your car that's no electronics and drive out to our, you know, 700-acre location, and we've got everything we need. We got doctors, we got, you know, agriculture, we got everything, and we're protected. We got our own little militia. You come out here, you can join us. So I became like an honorary member of this, you know, this kind of clan that's like ready for it to happen. So it's good to have, you know, good to have resources and friends. And it was just a cool project to meet a lot of really interesting people that, you know, and we have this like weird idea that preppers or people that want to like survivalists are somehow a little nutty, but actually there's, you know, sure there's some conspiracy theory that's a little off, but like perhaps. But, you know, these guys are, like, doing things that actually make a lot of sense. You know, you should be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. You should be able to, like, know, you know, month out where you can get supplies from and stuff. You shouldn't have to, like, go, like, oh, the store open? Darn it. I'll go tomorrow. I mean, there's a total disconnect from reality as far as where our food comes from, where our supplies come from, you know. And when it's not even about if. It's going to be when a really big one strikes. Hopefully by then they'll have things buffered properly so we can withstand it. But if not, you got to be ready to go. And you can't wait until tomorrow. You got to leave pretty much the day it happens if you want to get ahead of the tidal wave of people. Going back to your point, that's the other fascinating thing I learned about, like in a nuclear apocalypse or a solar apocalypse like this, you know, people become quote-unquote zombies, which doesn't mean they're the walking dead. But it means you're starving and you're going to eat whatever you can and you're going to take whatever you can to survive, because starving to death is inspiration to do almost anything inhuman you can imagine. So especially in groups, like you can group think, you're going to try to survive, and that's just how it is. So, it can be really – it's great. It's a great type of concept and world to write from, because you got unlimited dramas and conflicts and – exciting kind of things and empowering things. And then within that, of course, you saw the movie. There's a couple love stories built into it. There's relationship with the family, how they come together for the crisis, so it became like a family building exercise. And I hope they make it in the end, because we don't really know. But
pop, by the way, for the swerve at the end.
Mm-hmm.
For the swerve at the end, I totally pop for it. That was so cool. Just when things were going one way. A total swerve, that was really nice.
Yeah, we thought it was just, you know, and who knows if that's even possible the way that the you know, whatever. You know, we were a little bit loose with the science there at the very end, but we felt like it sort of possible, and we wanted to do it for dramatic reasons, you know, just to make it interesting, to show and to show like a night and day switch that people have within them to be like, oh my gosh, it's I've got to defend myself and shoot all these people, to like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to think that. Are you guys okay? Are you guys okay? You know, so it's like a total switch of perspectives, like from like these are my enemies to maybe to my friends. So it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Now the story does assume, I assume it takes place in rural North Carolina. Is that what you envisioned?
What was the question? Sorry.
I mean, does the story, does it particularly take place in rural North Carolina, or is it somewhere else? What's in your mind about where the story takes place?
Yeah, what I like to do, because as an indie filmmaker, you've got to cut every corner you can to make it look like, if you still want it to look like a real film. So in order to do that, you need to use real locations, living locations, I would call it, where people are actually, you know, they've got real life in them, and you have to kind of transform them. And so the easiest way to do that is to stage your film where you're located. And, of course, I do travel as needed, but something like this with a limited budget to do what we did, we found some willing locations to let us transform them into, you know, the Carrington family home, which was really two different properties. One was a house, and one was the actual where the horses were and stuff. And
the barn, yeah.
So, you know, obviously the – Flora fauna totally matches North Carolina, so I'm not going to say exactly where it needs to take place, but it's, you know, in the region would be appropriate. So, yeah, and it wasn't important to try to stage it anywhere else for the story, in my opinion. So we just kind of made it, you know. I like to also do, like, okay, you know, usually I'll do this anyway. If it's spring, well, it's spring in the scene in the movie. Unless it matters, you know, if it needs to be winter because we need all the crop dead or something, then we'll figure something out. But, yeah, so it's staged in North Carolina.
Okay.
Long
yeah, well, it's a great looking film. Now, one other thing that I wanted to tell you, are you aware that we had a major solar flare yesterday?
I did not. I used to get the updates every single day because every friend in my Facebook list would send me all the updates because they knew I was working on it. I've been on a solar flare hiatus for a while, trying to just trying to relax. And it's hard when you're hearing about all these near doom experiences going on all the time.
Right. And also, I don't know if anyone knows, but in 2012, we narrowly missed a coronal mass ejection. If the Earth had been a couple of days different in its orbit, the Carrington event would have happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really would.
It was a big one. Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, you're talking like probably, hundreds of millions of miles, but, of course, in space, it's not very much space at all. So.
No, not
really. Sorry, I got the air conditioner cranked up. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And you got your refrigerator going and everything. But no, I remember when Hurricane Matthew hit, and I couldn't get out of Pawleys Island. I could get to Georgetown, and the only place that was open was Tractor Supply Company, and the only thing they had was popcorn, and everybody's power had been out for about a day. Our refrigerators didn't work. Everybody lost our food. And when Tractor Supply opened its doors, I mean, there was a land rush for the popcorn. And that's when I got my first taste of how bad it could really be. And people were getting kind of nasty about, you know, getting that popcorn, getting those bags of popped popcorn. It was something else. It was scary. And then I found out
actually
how dark
beer corn.
It wouldn't have mattered what it was, we all wanted it. But then I found out the most amazing thing is I found out how dark.
Orville Redenbacher.
Orville Redenbacher. Yeah, well, Orville wasn't right. At night when it gets dark, or especially here in Pawleys Island, and there are no lights, it is so dark it's frightening. You can't even sleep. I mean, it's dead quiet except for the insects. And it's really scary. So when a Carrington-style event does happen, it's going to in 24 hours, everybody's sensibilities are going to be completely different. And I think that's what you spoiler. I don't want to talk about the first part of the film. Don't want to let anyone know what happened. But, you know, it was great. The only person that knew what was going on and knew to get prepared was Grandpa and everybody else. You know, everybody was making fun of him, weren't they, Rob?
No, yeah. Yeah, the people that know what to do look like the weirdos. That's how it always is. Like, you see the storm's about to hit, so I'm going to leave and go into some shelter. And someone's on the golf course going, "What? I'm gonna hit my next hit. What are you talking about?" Yeah, just kind of don't see danger.
Well, Rob, where do you want this project to go? What would you, if you could have three wishes and one of them was about this project, where would this one go? Where would it go? Would it go Netflix, television, major motion picture? What would it be if you had your wish?
It's a great question because we have a feature film script and we've had like 12 60-minute episodes all written. And we actually had a Sci-Fi Channel reviewed everything and they passed on it at the time, but it was a couple years ago. So we've been just kind of steadily, it's in the portfolio. You know, I've got a bunch of projects. This is one that I'm proud of that I know when the right time hits. And we've actually been in some talks with a local company in this area that's got a lot of inroads in Hollywood and whatnot. So we've got some potential to, TV would be awesome, you know, the right kind of TV.
Yeah. Well, I think people would certainly enjoy it. And so now what are you – And now I want to ask each of you, let's go back to Will. What are you working on now that you could tell us about? I know you got to be careful about what you're doing. Dave can't tell us all about what he's writing for to get published next year. But so what can you tell us that you're doing these days? What kind of projects?
Well, actually, Rob and I are working on a project alongside Aaron Snowell, who was the former trainer for Mike Tyson back in the late 80s and early 90s, and he also trained a total of 27 world champions. He was director of boxing for Don King for close to 30 years, and we're working on a project about Jack Johnson, the first African-American heavyweight champion of the world. And
very cool.
We've got some great interviews. We actually have interviews of witnesses who witnessed Jack Johnson's fatal car crash in 1946, and we interviewed them. And I mean, they're in their 80s now, but they saw it when they were little kids. So that was very fascinating to hear. And we're actually next month we'll be attending the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame. We'll have an exhibit for Jack Johnson. And we plan on getting some interviews there with some of the big heavyweights. And, Rob, do you have anything you want to add to that about Jack Johnson?
Sure. He's like this he's an American icon, and that's the way we want to approach this because there's another prominent documentary that was called Unforgivable Blackness, which really focused on the struggle of becoming the champion because of, racism and that sort of thing. But we want to focus on how that's actually important, how he overcame all of that and everything else. And on top of that, more to become the world champion, which is a feat, you know, unto none other. Because especially at the time, the only thing driving television at first, one of those two things was boxing. And it was coming out right when he became champion. So he was driving the movement of television. So he has all these things surrounding him that make him so interesting that people have no idea about. It's not really part of curriculum. I didn't know much about him until I learned about the project. So this is a story that everyone needs to know, and we're super excited to talk about it. And I know we've got all these legendary boxers that signed on, that they want to, that they're supporting us. And we've got, all these amazing figures that have backed us to bring this to light. So it's going to be we're shooting for a feature film and a documentary. Both need to be funded, of course, and that's what we're waiting on. But we're ready to go as soon as we got the green light. We want to do it.
Well, that
awesome.
Sounds wonderful. I know, Papa,
you can say what you want. Mike Tyson is awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah. And he's a character to say, man. He, Everyone I know that met him has really enjoyed it. He's just a really enjoyable person to be around these days. So he's not like his old best, but Spitfire, you know, he's like a really cool guy. So I'm looking forward to meeting him myself.
If you ever watch the not MMA, what is it? The Bellator. A couple months ago, they had a Bellator on, and he was sitting in the front row, and they pan the camera back, and they say, special guest in the crowd tonight, Mike Tyson, and there he is, you know, doing the old hands up and waves. So in between the commercial, I guess they brought him onto the announcer's desk, put the headset on him, and let him call the next fight.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Jesus. Why they don't sign him right there, called. If they would assign Mike Tyson to let him announce those fights, I would never miss another one. I'd even do the pay-per-views just to listen to Mike.
Yeah.
He wasn't scientific about it at all. He was going, oh, man, he's turning his lights out. Oh, no. Dad, he got punched in the head. I mean, it was hilarious. And and if you ever get a chance to watch his stage routine that he does now, telling his life story, man, I mean, and he's on.
I like when he talks to the pigeon.
That's why you got to love the guy, because he realizes his mistakes. He acknowledges the bad moves he's made, and he's.
Absolutely. That's
too good.
I think of
but you know, it's really interesting about Mike Tyson. He's such a pro. And Papa Stroh, that's like whenever we get a chance, when we used to get a chance to hear a Dusty Rhodes being the commentator for wrestling or somebody great like that, it just made a whole world of difference, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Really? Commentary makes the show and an event. Without good commentating, a show wouldn't be a show, and it would pretty much be a disaster waiting to happen if it weren't for good commentary.
Yeah, and I think – in my opinion, I feel like commentary is kind of you kind of take it for granted when you're watching something.
Oh yeah.
You know, when you watch a game or you know wrestling or boxing, you forget about the commentary. But you're right, commentary makes it or breaks it.
Yeah, just watch any sporting event where Joe Buck is talking, and you'll learn pretty quick. How good commentating can really bring a game around, because anything that he announces is just, you know, ice picks to the ears. It's horrible. But, you know, if you look on YouTube, speaking of Dusty, there is a match, and I can't remember whether it's called the Samoan Clubberin or Hawaiian Clubberin. I can't remember, but it's Haku and Barbarian, a bunch of those guys fighting. Those two guys were tagged up, and they're fighting somebody else. I can't remember who it is. But the match was so awful from a wrestling standpoint. It was just horrible. You had two guys that were just like chihuahuas for and their timing was so off. But Dusty was calling the match. And, I mean, you don't even have to watch it. You could just turn it on, turn it up, and then listen to it while you're doing the dishes. They're clubbering, and they're Hawaiian clubbering. I mean, it's...
I was in an event with Dusty commentating one time where Benoit Sullivan was having those false can anywhere matches, right? And when the time when they went in the ladies' bathroom, I mean, Dusty, like, had a conniption fit. With the, like, freaking out commentary. Like, they did it in the ladies' bathroom. Sullivan took the toilet paper, smacked it beside Benoit's head, baby. Oh, hell, we can lose in the ladies' bathroom. Don't pick up that tampon, baby. Put that down. You know, I'm dying.
Yeah. Someone call my name.
Hey, Dr. John, it's me, Justin. Can I make a comment,
yeah,
please?
Up?
May I?
Sure.
Yeah. I would say in all sports, I would say the two best commentators are Jim Ross for wrestling, and I would say for sports, I would say Harry Callis for the Phillies. Have you heard of those two? baseball,
oh, yeah.
baseball and wrestling.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were
two pretty good ones.
Yeah.
I know
like
Howard
Cosell. Gordon Soley.
Howard Cosell.
Soley's the guy.
To me.
Yeah. I always thought Soley and I always
oh,
thought
Gordon Soley,
Bobby
yeah.
Heenan. And Heenan and Ventura and Monsoon, yeah, Gorilla. And in the ring, Oakland was always one of my favorites. He played off of Ric Flair
yeah.
so well.
Oakland, yeah, Mean Gene.
It's and you know Flair goes off script every time he gets in there, and Gene just rolls with it, you know?
Gene's facial expressions are priceless. It's just absolutely
yes.
priceless.
That's another good YouTube if you need a day boost. If you're having a bad day, just YouTube Gene Okerlund laughs, and it's all the promos that he did. Where somebody would say something stupid, and he'd bust out laughing.
Oh my God, the ones he did with Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yes,
you know how Macho Man is. He had his own stick, his own style, and every now and then Gene would just like look at the camera with like a blank stare. You know, I would lose it. It was classic, especially the one with the cream. When Savage talked about being the cream of the crop, and he's flipping around this creamer, this coffee creamer, all over his body, you know what I mean? Behind his back, over his shoulder, and Gene just kept looking at the camera and holding his back every now and then with a blank stare.
Rob Underhill, I got to tell you something. I know the boxing people are just as much about the boxing announcers as us wrestling people are about the wrestling announcers. You're gonna have a hit on your hands. I know you are.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a lot of the personality of a boxing match or a wrestling match is the commentators and then the whatever interactions happen in the middle. Because like I'm just thinking about some of the people we've just been able to meet. So we got to meet a guy that's done like over 140 professional boxing matches, including title fights. And he lives right out here too. So we got to hang out with him, and he's a real personality. You know, it's like ingrained in him. So like even day to day, we're just hanging out, and he's like busting out jokes and spinning things
yeah.
and making them. You know, and I just loved I love the experience of meeting all these characters.
So when are you looking to get this project out? What do you think is a reasonable guess? Sometime next year, maybe?
Well, the thing with films, and Will can attest to this, is a perfect example of how this whole thing works is have y'all seen the movie Radio? It's a while back,
yes.
but it happened in North Carolina.
Right?
Yeah. So it's in North Carolina,
yeah.
and they greenlit it. They're like, okay, we're going to start shooting in a few months. Well, 6 years later, they start shooting. So that's just how it works in this kind of industry. We could get all the money tomorrow and still wait 2 years. So it's right now we're just trying to raise funds and awareness and build. And we've got a lot of really cool mysteries to reveal about the death of the legend and about the life. So we're really excited about everything we're going to be able to do once we get started.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, we're all looking forward to it. And you know, as you get as you move to your next stage in production, I'd love to have you guys back to just talk about this. I mean, we all
oh, yes.
The whole panel we love sports. I mean, we love wrestling.
Yeah.
About
oh, yeah.
as anything, and we'd just love to talk with you about this. So now. What kind of background, Rob, I'll go with you, and then we'll talk to Will. What kind of background, Rob, did you have in film, or how did you get involved in it? Because I know a lot of people that are listening would love to know how to get in this business. So
mm-hmm.
how did you do it, and what would you tell them? How would you help them with some good advice?
Wow. Jeez. Yeah, so my advice, and this is important, guys, so listen, whoever out there is about to do filmmaking, is you know, moving with your parents, beg, borrow, steal. No, that's one avenue, the independent filmmaker. But the best thing you can do for yourself is surround yourself with people that actually know what they're doing. Now, if you're one easy way is to be really cool and hang out on set and be really helpful, and then people want you around. It's that simple. Because you can't imagine, like, how much a great attitude goes a long, long way when you're doing a 16-hour shoot day and you're all working on adrenaline. That's what drives you, is the positive energy. People are having a great time. They're working, but, you know, you feel it, right? And that's the kind of thing that people want to be around. And so you'll be around these people who actually know what they're doing. You learn the camera. You got to learn everything. You got to learn the editing. You got to learn how to organize, how the director works, and every director is different. So how the producer works, you can get your hands on a little bit of everything on a smaller set. And you can also work on bigger sets, too, with that kind of attitude. And you start getting inroads, and people start talking about you and trading you off like you're a pitcher or something, right? And before you know it, you're working on bigger and bigger projects. But you always have to always be driving forward, too, because you can easily get caught up doing, like, oh, I'm the sound guy now. Well, if you don't want to do that, if you want to make movies, you have to keep moving forward on your own, because people will try to keep you where you're at. It may pay well, and you might end up doing that the rest of your life. So especially in Hollywood, they love to put you in the spot and keep you there. So you've got to keep the drive going and the passion to make films and tell stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Testify.
Yeah, Pops, you've been on a lot of sets, and I know that when you were talking about Son of Clowns, you were talking about how great everybody was and how well people got along and worked together, didn't you?
That makes the difference, you know what I mean? A good morale on set with cast and crew, that means everything, trust me. Because,
I agree.
I've been on set with some places where it's like you're telling yourself, I just can't wait till they say it's a wrap and just get out. but I'm telling you, but I've been really blessed to be on some set with a great cast and crew, and it amazes me even to this day how hard everybody works behind the scenes, putting everything together and telling that story in front of film. It's just film magic is just amazing, just to witness and watch everybody do their thing, and you just feel really blessed to be a part of it. You really do.
I think we'll all
agree.
Now, Will, what do you think? What kind of advice do you have to someone who wants to get in the business? I think you were the executive producer of your latest film, No Child. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it goes back to what Rob said. I 100% agree that you have to.
You there with us? Oh, we may have lost him. Technology may have.
Oh, no. Nope. Oh, he's back.
You there? Okay, there good. Good. Yeah. So what were you saying, Rob? Will?
I guess I was waiting to see Will pop back on. Yeah, it's weird. He popped off the line there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can see where he's going with it, which is, that's exactly the path Will was taking as well. You know, I kind of gave him the advice, but he's got his own drive, and he's really talented at meeting a lot of interesting people. Like, you know, that's how we got to know Aaron Stillwell, is he just has this kind of, like, knack about comfortably, you know, meeting all sorts of people no matter what their walk in life is, and that's a very important role of, you know, trait for a producer as well. And I got, you know, give him huge kudos for really hustling, and because you just can't make a featurette like No Child with nothing. You got to feed people, and you got to get props and get locations. And he really hustled and made it possible by raising the funds. So, and that's all the indie filmmakers will tell you. The only hardest thing, besides making an awesome story, is raising funds, because we're all creatives that want to, like, you know, not bother people and make it happen. And it's hard to ask and do it the right way. So it's a blessing to have someone who could really hustle and make it happen.
Gotcha. I think that's a great thing to say, and hopefully it's something that everybody can learn about. Hey, Will, did we get you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
That's a technology. Okay.
Yeah. I was saying I 100% agree with what Rob said. You have to surround yourself with like-minded individuals, people that know what they're doing. You know, it's kind of like I could try to do everything myself, but I'm still not going to be able to do it as good as somebody who is experienced and passionate about the certain thing that they do. So that's, you know, what I did with Rob. Rob's great at directing, writing. Arvind Raghupathy, who has been a cinematographer for a lot of Rob's films, he's great at cinematography. So I knew that they're great at doing that. You know, and then we just started adding more people to the circle that were great at what they do. And, you know, it's like a multiplying effect when it's not 1 + 1 = 2. It starts really compounding when you get all these people, like-minded individuals together, focusing on the same goal. It's like Aaron always says, Aaron Snowell, he says, teamwork makes the dream work, and it's true.
Nice call.
Teamwork makes the dream work. That's
yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. Well, I tell you what, we're going to make the last round here. I want to just ask everybody, what have you got to say to add to what we've done tonight? And do you have anything to plug? Because Papa Stroh showed me on his show, we do our final round of plugs. In fact, I'll start with Papa Stroh right now, and then we'll get to our guests, and then Dave, and whoever else is here. So, Papa Stroh, what you got to say to help us wrap up here?
Man, well, busy couple weeks. Saturday, I'm going to be at the Columbia, South Carolina Comic and Toy Con at the Jamal Temple in Columbia, South Carolina. Definitely want to check that one. I'm going to be there like at 10 a.m., I think. So, in the area, come check me out and all the great artists, all the great talent on hand at the Comic and Tour Show. And then Sunday I'm flying to Vegas for the Cauliflower Club reunion. I'll be at the Gold Coast Casino and Hotel, Las Vegas, Nevada. That Monday I'm going to be partaking in the NWA Vendetta Pros Casino Royale Battle Royal that'll be taking place. And then I've seen the sights and sounds of Vegas. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, while in Vegas, we're having special dinners and banquets, giving awards and honors to different legends of professional wrestling. Some of the people on hand that's going to be getting awards are like the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, the Glow Girls. You guys remember them? And
yeah,
Tully Blanchard, the Four Horsemen, is going to be giving an award out as well. So I'm really looking forward to catching up with some of my wrestling family there. And then May 6th, I'm going to be in Riceville Beach, North Carolina, Johnny Mercer's Pier for Fishing with Special Friends, and which is a fishing tournament that we do once a year for the disabled. And it's great to put smiles on people's faces, and it's a great time for everybody, for the whole family. And we're doing that from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. then. And then May 13th and 14th, I'll be at Tidewater Comic Con, Virginia Beach, Virginia, at the Virginia Beach Convention Center. And then the following week afterwards, I'm going to be at May 19th and 20th, we'll be at the Mid-Atlantic Wrestle Expo at the Richmond Convention Center in Richmond, Virginia. And then Dr. John Agar, we got a special deal going on after, or later on that night on the 20th, a special party get together.
That's right. We're going to have some special guests to be announced. We'll be doing it. I'll have the location put up, so you can go to Comic-Con Stars, check out the Facebook event, find out all about it. It's going to be a blast. We're going to have a super time that night.
Yeah, and then May 26th, I'm going to be at 11 a.m., I think, that morning. You're going to be on Banana Jack Murphy on Tiger Radio in Lawrence, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then later on that evening, I'm going to do a special event with Myrtle Beach Speedway at 6 o'clock that evening. And as far as films go, Checkpoint with myself, Bill Goldberg, William Forsythe, Kenny Johnson, Mindy Robinson, late Ricky Harris, all-star cast. It's out now on Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Walmart's, as well as Son of Clowns is also on Amazon Prime. And be on the lookout for the Rat Pack premiere later on this year with myself, Sue Thomas Howell, Randy Jones. Fun film for the whole family. And for all the latest on TV, wrestling, and film, go to my official website, rather, at thestro.com, Facebook at Stro the Maestro, Twitter at thestro, and on Instagram at Stro Maestro.
All righty. That's great. You got a busy, busy May, and we're going to have a great time. I'll be doing some of those events, so it'll be a blast. All right, Rob Underhill, what have you got? What's your 60-second wrap here?
Well, he got 2 minutes. I mean, let's be fair. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. So,
that was a mouthful. I'm blowed up right now, so.
I'm trying to write all the notes about all the events. People can check me out at if you want to see what we're up to and what I'm up to specifically. I've got Rob Underhill Productions on Facebook, or you can go to robunderhill.com. And of course, No Child is on there. No Child Movie on Facebook. And of course, the Karen Event is on Facebook as well. And there's lots of cool stuff coming up. You know, of course, the shoot / awesomeness at the Atlanta Hall of Fame coming up, Atlantic City, I mean. And then and I think it's about a week, we've got Moogfest out here, which has become this big Goliath thing in North Carolina with these ridiculously high-priced tickets. But I get to produce a really cool show for that. So I'll be doing that for 4 days in about a week or two. I got to check the planner. But Moogfest is the thing to check out. As far as, like, productions go, you know, I'll be working with Will closely, and I've got a number of other projects, and I'll be regularly announcing stuff on Facebook. Check us out on Facebook. Oh, and I'll do one more shout out to real quick to y'all can check me out, and also I've got a really cool business partner doing nonprofit type work, and also we're blowing up into narrative filmmaking and that sort of thing, promotional videos, and that's Miru, M-I-R-U Productions. And Will, of course, has been integral in a lot of these things, so he's also kind of a honorary partner of that production team, too.
All right. Thank you very much. There, yeah, as we said, the one-minute rap lasts as long as you need to. Will, what's your one-minute rap?
Well, first off, listening to Stro over there, it made me realize I got to start doing more with my life. I got to start being more productive because it sounds like he's got some really cool things going on, and I got to step my game up. That's for sure. So, but now we're just, you know, putting the final touches on No Child with, you know, the what we can't quite talk about yet, but hopefully we will be able to mention in a couple weeks. We're preparing for the Jack Johnson exhibit, which is Memorial Day weekend next month. And then another thing Rob and I didn't mention is the film Aghast. Rob, you mentioned that when I was cut off the phone.
No, I did not, actually. That's a new one that's going to be huge, and that's actually the flagship for Miru Productions, so I'm glad you brought that up.
So that I had some involvement with that.
Well, he's the executive producer. I think that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Don't.
But you and Maxine with Miru Productions are the brains and talent behind the whole thing. So, but that should be touring the festival circuit here shortly. So we're looking forward to seeing where that goes.
Wish you the best.
But thanks a lot for having
us
on the show.
Oh, man, great to have you guys on, man. Really, pleasure.
Yeah. Ben, thrill. Yeah, thanks so much.
Get you guys back. Dave, what you got for us?
Well, for one, I will not be going to Las Vegas with Stro. I'm good. Check that off the list.
Oh, man. Bummer.
Yeah. Not that I wouldn't try, of course, but, you know, can't fit in the luggage. I'll pick up on the screening process. But
just remember, what happens
no, actually,
in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Vegas. Yeah, including your luggage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's it.
Just ready to do the re-release and everything. You know, it's kind of funny how much under re-releasing a series of books when you've been through a failed publishing gig, but still working on that, working heavy duty on the fifth book. And I tell you, it's real good to get back into the writing game. 2016 was a horrible year for me, and getting back into the ring is really helping out. Feels good to get back on that computer and start typing again. So other than that, we got Myrtle Beach next month for XCon, of course. Hope for the best down there. And if nothing else, it's a good excuse to hang out with the guys and the gals down there and knock back a few adult beverages with my lovely wife and having a good time down that way. So
nice.
If you're down towards Myrtle Beach, May 19th through the 21st, stop by the table, say hi. And if you see us out somewhere out that evening, don't be afraid to buy us drinks. we all know.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks for everything. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see everybody next week on Comic-Con Stars.
Thanks so much.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.